afternoon, and welcome to We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere and Kubota tractor dealer up in Shasta Lake City. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, and they do everything tractors, parts, sales, service, whatever you need, they can take care of you up there. Their phone number is 530-226-9226, or you can get them on the web at readingtractors.com. Bingo.
Bingo.
Yeah, there we are.
Nice.
Yeah.
So,
who's our guest today?
Our guest today is Peter Wallison. We're going to jump right into it because we have two guests today. I guess I should give you that right up front. We're originally airing this show on December 16th in the year 2018. I know we've re-aired shows before in a different year, and people are all mad. We said things about the president, didn't tell them which one.
yeah, like, big difference.
It's like, oopsie, I guess I should start giving a date at the beginning so we don't have any mishaps here. So anyway, it's 2018 at the moment, and our first half is regarding a new book. It's called Judicial Fortitude. Wouldn't we like to have some of that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Peter Wallace.
So it's perfect for Christmas time. All I want for Christmas is some judicial fortitude. And the subtitle is The Last Chance to Rein in the Administrative State. And so I have a feeling this will be a topic that's near and dear to people's hearts. Our guest is the author, Peter Wallison. He is a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute and author of the new book, Judicial Fortitude, as I just said. Let's see. He is a frequent media guest. And here he is in our lineup, huh? Which makes us pretty awesome. That's not in the bio.
That's not in the bio.
That was just a little part.
Now you're just winging it.
That was just a little part I added. He's appeared on, major radio. Here we go.
Okay, that's us.
Okay, and television programs, but we have faces for radio, so we'll stay where we are.
Yeah.
Before joining the American Enterprise Institute in 1999, he practiced law as a partner in Gibson, Dunn & Crutcher in the firm's Washington and New York offices. He was general counsel of the Treasury Department from 1981 to 85, and he was White House counsel for President Ronald Reagan from 86 to 87. And in the early 70s, he was counsel to Vice President Nelson Rockefeller. So this is like, we're in a whole new realm of information and
that's
also
right.
Outlook.
That's right.
Somebody who comes from the time period where we think things made sense, but I bet he's going to tell us it didn't make sense then either.
Well, I bet it made sense then, but it's gone off the rails.
Yeah, it's
totally
gone berserko now. So he has also authored several other books. I should include that here before we forget. One of the books is Ronald Reagan, The Power of Conviction and the Success of His Presidency. That was in 2003. And Hidden in Plain Sight, What Really Caused the World's Worst Financial Crisis and Why It Could Happen Again. That's 2015. Mm-hmm. So those are all listed on our website that I forgot to mention. So you can find that all at wethepeopleradio.us. Information about our guests, links to previous shows, all of our archives are free of charge to listen to. And we have taken out our celebrations of capitalism, a.k.a. the commercials, for you so that you can actually hear them in less time if you pick them up after our regular Sunday program.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this interview on this book. It sounds super interesting.
God love his publicist. He is a great guy. And I put his contact information on there, Stephen Manfredi. He is with the Manfredi Strategy Group, and he always gives us, sometimes we don't need him, but on a topic like this, he gave us 10 interview questions. It's like, I posted them on the website, because we're not that tricky. So, if you'd like to see what we'll be talking about, that's what we'll be talking about. We have a list. So, I know Mr. Wallison had some things to do. Are you done doing them?
I'm done doing them. I'm sitting quietly in my family's guest room. This is Christmas in New York, and it's crazy generally, but it's pouring rain.
Oh, yeah, here
it's
too.
About 34 degrees.
Yeah, you guys might get a white Christmas. I know it's pouring rain and wet and cold, so who knows?
Oh, it's awful. So I couldn't get a taxi, but I am now, I arrived, and I'm sitting in a very lovely room, and I'm ready to talk.
Cool. All right, well... thanks to Mr. Manfredi, we actually have some things to ask you, not that we really feel compelled to do that, if you just want to go for it.
Yeah, tell us why you wrote this book.
We don't pretend to sound smart about things we know nothing about.
Well, I'm happy to do it without the questions.
All right.
Just start off talking, and if you have some questions about what I say, that would be fine. It'd be great.
Cool. Well,
first of all, just to talk about what the administrative state is, and in some interviews, I have people who say, "Well, what is this administrative state?" And the answer is that it is the federal government's agencies, from the very important ones, the very large ones like the Treasury Department or HHS, Department of Education, all the way down to, and there are hundreds and hundreds of them, all the way down to the independent agencies like the SEC or the FCC. These are very powerful organizations, and they have become much more powerful over the last 25 or 30 years. And the real problem for me, and the reason I wrote the book, is that to me they represent a threat to democracy, because they have so much power and they are able to make so many rules that, in fact, they seem to be supplanting the Congress in terms of making laws for the American people.
Yeah, now, I think people have seen that going on for a long time now. It's like our Congress doesn't make laws anymore. The judiciary does.
They make laws, but then all of a sudden these guys make all the, like EPA is a great example, especially for out here where we are. EPA goes wild. And then Congress has to pass a law to make them not go wild, but that's really hard to do. It takes a long time.
It is very hard. That's right. It's very hard to do. And in fact, it's impossible for either Congress or the president to rein in the administrative state themselves, rein in all these agencies.
Which is scary since the president's in charge of them. Oops.
Right, exactly. And that's a very odd situation. But when I tell you why it's like this, you'll see. And that is that for the last 25 years, in every year, more than 3,000 rules and regulations have come out of these agencies. 3,000 rules and regulations
each
year, for a total of about 101,000 regulations that are now on the American people to obey. But, of course, the American people can have no idea what these regulations are requiring them to do. And because there are so many, Congress can't really step in and review each of them. The president doesn't have the time. His staff doesn't have the time to review every one of them. So they just keep pouring out. And the question is, how can we stop that from happening? There are three parts of our government, as you know. There is a Congress that is supposed to make the laws. This is a democracy. We elect our representatives. They are supposed to make the laws. There is the executive branch headed by the president, and they're supposed to enforce the laws. But that's all. Just enforce the laws that Congress makes, not go beyond that. And then there is the judiciary, and they are supposed to interpret the laws. And unfortunately, what has been happening is that Congress, over many years, has begun to hand over to these administrative agencies a lot of power. You were talking before about the EPA. EPA is a perfect example of that. When Congress was making rules about clean water, instead of deciding themselves how far the rules were supposed to go and who was actually supposed to be covered, they handed that all over to the EPA. So it turns out that the real rules, the real laws, are being made by these unelected people in Washington, D.C., and not by the people who are representing the American people.
And, right. And I'll give you an example that we had here in our local area, because we have so much agriculture here. So the Army Corps of Engineers is regularly, people may have followed the Duarte case. I think the guy's in almost $3 million in fines now. And basically planting a crop, he created little furrows, which, of course, became waters of the U.S. because his rain fell in a little depression in the ground. Okay, so it got super, super crazy. So the congressman here in the 1st District actually put in it became law, actually. It was one sentence. People complain all the time, oh, all these bills are too big. This was a little attachment, amendment that said that the EPA is not allowed to regulate farming. I mean, It was under 20 words. And that was signed into law. That's fairly straightforward. So all this silliness kept continuing here. So the local congressional office has a meeting with the EPA guy or the Army Corps of Engineer guys, and they said, "Well, here's this new law. You know, Army Corps of Engineers is no longer allowed to regulate farming. So what are you guys doing?" You know what their answer was? "We don't read it that way."
Yeah, sure.
We don't read it that way. It's like, yeah, it doesn't
and that
matter
stops
how
them in their tracks that, right there.
It doesn't matter how simple that, you make it. You can't get there from here.
This is such a perfect example of the book.
Yeah.
Because it's called Judicial Fortitude. And what it's titled that because it's important that the courts have the fortitude to stand up to the elected branches. And the courts now are the only ones who can stop the growth and the power of the administrative state. And that is, someone has to take this case to court, the one you're talking about whether they can regulate farming, and the courts would then decide whether what was intended by Congress was to allow EPA to read it the way they want or the way Congress intended that law to be read. That's why it is so important that the courts get much more involved in looking at what these laws provide, what kind of powers they give to the administrative state, and to cut back on what the administrative agencies are doing by interpreting the laws the way Congress intended the law to be interpreted.
Yeah, not the crazy town environmental way. Which part of not allowed to regulate farming was confusing? We have to take a really, really quick break. We're going to be back with our guest. I can already tell we are not going to have enough time, but we will do our best, and we cut back on the music today, so you'll be happy for that. We'll get right back to him. Our guest is Peter Wallison, the author of Judicial Fortitude. You are listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. All right, Mr. Wallison. We were talking in the break that the idea of the judiciary becoming more having a heavier hand probably freaks out some people because they're thinking, "Oh my gosh, no, they're already doing it." But I think what we're seeing now, at least out here in the West, is that the courts are actually making their own laws too. So you have the administrative state making up stuff, the courts are making up stuff, and then they back up the administrative guys, and it's like a 2-to-1 game.
Right. Classic examples: the Ninth Circuit, when they do pass a law, Ninth Circuit steps in and says, "Oh no, you can't do that." And
you're not allowed to swear on the radio. You just said Ninth Circuit.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah. So, I totally understand what you're saying, but how do we combat that?
Well, we have to look at the Supreme Court. There is only one decider, and that is the Supreme Court. And today, we have a majority of the court, unlike all the time I've been practicing law or have been observing what the courts do. This is the first time we've had a majority of conservatives.
And the Kavanaugh confirmation was
exactly.
The kind of game changer, right?
That's right. That made the difference. And so now we have five people on the court who have said over time and various times during their careers, some of them already on the court, like Justice Thomas, who I dedicated the book to, others who were judges in the appellate system, and that would be Gorsuch, who was appointed by Trump, and also Kavanaugh, appointed by Trump. All of those people have at one time or another said that they believe that they have to cut back on the threats to the separation of powers. And what they mean by that is that what the framers decided when they wrote the Constitution is that the laws would only be made by Congress and the executive branch would only enforce the laws. They wouldn't make laws. And so what that means to them And as cases come up through the system to them, they will start cutting back on the authority of the administrative agencies. Just this past week, the Supreme Court, I'm sure you haven't heard about this because almost no one covered this, but just in the past week, the Supreme Court took a case in which the Veterans Administration was claiming to change some of its regulations in a way that made it difficult for a veteran to receive compensation for his PTSD. And the court took that case because there has been, for the last 85 years, an idea in the courts that they had to defer, that is to accept, whatever the agencies said their regulations meant. The court now has taken this case. They wouldn't have taken this case if they were going to just reaffirm something they've been doing for 85 years.
Right.
So they are going to make a new rule here, which will probably be that the courts no longer have to defer to agencies' changes in their own regulations. And when you think about it, that's really important for the rule of law in this country, because to the extent that people even read regulations, they're told, they know by reading the regulation what they're required to do. But if the agency can just change the regulation at any time it wants, then people really have no way of knowing how they're supposed to structure their businesses or their personal activities and so forth. So if the court actually goes as far as to take away that what is called deference for the agencies, that will be a big step in toward a much better rule of law in the United States. The next thing that has to be done is to deal with a case called Chevron versus Natural Resources Defense Council.
No.
And that case, which was decided in 1984, provides for deference to agencies' interpretation of their own powers.
Yeah.
It goes even further.
How could that go wrong?
Right. What could happen then?
Yeah, how could that be bad?
So, right. And so I think the court is going to pick that one up, too, because all of those guys said at one time or another that the Chevron case has made things get out of control. And that's why we have 3,000 regulations every year, more than 3,000 every year, and over 100,000 in the last 25 years because of this Chevron case. So I think the court will take that up, and I think they will cut back on deference there. Now, this is where judicial fortitude comes in, because the blowback will be enormous when the court tries to do this. There will be huge opposition from the left. And what they're going to say is, oh, the court is taking away all our protections that we've had since the New Deal, all that stuff.
All our free money since the Equal Access to Justice Act was passed.
Yeah, all those things. But the point is this a democracy or is it not? And that's what we conservatives have to talk about. Are the people making the rules, or are a group of unelected folks living around Washington, D.C., making the rules? And so this is the point of the book, and that's why I wrote the book, so that people will have an opportunity to see that there is a way of cutting back on something like the administrative state, which is actually taking away, gradually, year after year, taking away more and more of our democracy.
So if the court rules to change that, every single rule on these agencies doesn't have to be relitigated, does it? I mean, it should be kind of a blanket.
If somebody calls them on it, though, they don't automatically get a pass, because that's what's happening now.
Right, they just get a pass. But if the Supreme Court changes their view on that, then, we have thousands of these regulations. They don't all have to go back to the Supreme Court at that point.
That's a really good question, and what will happen here is that the agencies will stop issuing so many regulations, because they will be aware then that every new regulation that comes out can be challenged by private citizens under what the court is, I hope, going to say eventually, and that is the courts no longer have to pay deference to what the agencies think their power is. The courts will decide what the agency's power is, and so that will immediately make it very difficult for the agencies to establish new rules that weren't actually intended by Congress. Then you have a further problem going back into history, because there are an awful lot of rules that are already out there, and those will have to be dealt with over time. But the fact is that once the agencies recognize that they can be challenged, and the courts are willing to do that, then they're going to stop making new regulations and enforcing old regulations where they are no longer sure that they really have the authority from Congress to make those rules.
Sure, because every time someone is confronted by an agency that says, you must do X, Y, and Z, the first question that the citizen should ask is, I want to see the regulation, and I want to see the laws that allow that regulation to be put in place. Those two things should tie in sequence, direct sequence. Here's the law that says you can't do blah, blah, blah. And so we've actually put it in the on-the-ground wording that says this, which is the regulation. Those two things should be exactly the same. And right now there's a huge disconnect.
Exactly. And we can change that. And the courts can change that. But you do need a majority at the Supreme Court to do it. And that majority has to, they have to be guys who... men and women who are willing to take the criticism that they are going to get in the media for doing this. And I think we have such people now, but they will have to be in that court for years and years.
Yeah, because the left is somehow just in love with bureaucracy. They bigger government, more bureaucrats, more... It's just it's crazy to me. We have to take another really quick break and celebrate a little capitalism here. And we'll be back with our guest, Peter J. Wallison, who has authored a book called Judicial Fortitude. I think you'll like it. You can find everything about the program and our guest at wethepeopleradio.us.
Peter, one of the things that the Trump administration has done that's gone largely unnoticed is he has appointed a lot of judges, and it's been kind of a quiet thing. I mean, he's got a long way to go, but what do you think the impact of that's going to be?
Well, it's exactly what I was hoping it would be, and that is that these are all people who are conservatives.
Mm-hmm.
And that will mean that they are going to be reading the law and making sure that the agencies do not go beyond what authority Congress actually gave them. It may not make a lot of news where you are, but it's making a lot of news in Washington. And one of the things that the Senate has been trying to do all this time is to get these judges confirmed. In large numbers, they will have 12 or 13 of them, district judges and appellate court judges, up for confirmation at a time.
Right.
And it's very hard to do because filibusters are not permitted anymore on appointments, but you do get 30 hours of debate on each appointment in the Senate. So the Democrats have been trying over time to delay things as much as possible, but the Senate Majority Leader... has been very strong on getting these people up before the Senate and taking the time to make sure they get a vote and are confirmed for these judgeships because these are very, very important.
Do you think the media, because like you're saying, out here you hear very little about these appointments. Do you think the media really recognizes the importance of this? I mean, they're busy chasing Russia and Donald Trump's parking violations. In the meantime, he's quietly, appointing judges. I think they're, I don't know, from what I see, they're largely overlooking the importance of what's going on there.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the reason they are overlooking it is they know it. There's been lots of commentary in the media about how important this is. But in terms of news stories, it's not much of a news story.
Right.
That a person who nobody knows has now been appointed to a court position that nobody understands.
Right.
It just it's not something that really grabs your attention.
Exactly.
There's a headline about it. But he has put in, I don't know what the number is now, but he's well past what Obama was doing in his 8 years, and Trump has done it in two. So it is continuing along that path, and as long as the Senate remains in Republican hands, Trump has two more years to continue to funnel these conservatives into the court system, and that means that every time a case comes up, there will likely be a conservative view, if not a conservative majority, on the court that is looking at the.
What's the term for these judges?
Lifetime.
Okay.
Lifetime. And that's really important to know because that, in the book, again, let me go back to the book for a moment. This is called Judicial Fortitude. I use that term because Alexander Hamilton, who was one of the framers of the Constitution, wrote a piece at the time that the framers were trying to persuade the American people to adopt this Constitution. And he was asked, well, why is it in a democratic society that we have these judges who are appointed for life, and that's in the Constitution. And Alexander Hamilton answered it this way. He said, well, the purpose of the courts is to make sure that the Constitution that we have established remains in effect, even if the elected branches, that is the President and Congress, try to modify it in some way. Because we believe that the Constitution preserves people's liberties, and that's what this whole thing has been about. And so, what the reason we gave all these court the judges lifetime appointments is so they will have the fortitude to stand up to the elected branches,
right.
Because they
not
don't have a re-election situation going
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
It's no longer a popularity contest over there.
It's really an important point. And the trouble is, however, if I can go on just a little bit about this, in 1935, the court did try to turn down a number of things that Franklin Roosevelt had proposed and the Congress had adopted as unconstitutional. And in 1936, Roosevelt had a landslide re-election, and at that time he proposed what was called the court packing plan, which would have put seven new justices on the Supreme Court to make it a court of 16, but would have given his point of view a majority on that court.
Right.
So that frightened the Supreme Court. And they backed away from a lot of the positions they had been taking, that some of the things that Roosevelt had proposed were unconstitutional. They backed away. Even though the court packing plan was not adopted, I think the Supreme Court recognized that they couldn't go too far here without getting into trouble. Now we're in almost the same exact position in that we have a Supreme Court that would be willing to turn down some of these things that the agencies are doing, but there will be a lot of opposition, a lot of blowback on this activity, and it's necessary under those circumstances for conservatives throughout this country instead of fighting about one another, with one another, to go out and say, look, this is important. This is our democracy. We have to be able to make sure that the rules are made by the people we elect and not by this unelected group. So this, we're coming to the same point again in our history where we were in 1935. In 1935, the court got frightened away from continuing on the course it was on, and we're now in a place where the court could again be frightened away, even though these guys are conservatives. If the blowback is so tough and difficult for them to preserve the reputation of the court or to preserve the idea that the court will continue to make rules that are at least somewhat conservative, they might have to back away from the things that really have to be done. And that's why all conservatives should be out there making sure that the court knows that they will have support if they go forward with reining in the administrative state.
Yeah, see, because in I think a lot of our citizenry fundamentally misunderstands how a representative republic actually works. Because when they see, they want the Supreme Court to decide things the way they see them or what they view the public sentiment is, which isn't their job. You know, when people were saying if Kavanaugh gets on the court, they'll be able to keep Donald Trump in the presidency forever. It's like, okay, all right, well that's. That's probably more than a fundamental misunderstanding there. That's about as kind as I get. And then you swing back over to the legislative branch, and people want their member of Congress or their senator, whichever, and fire the bureaucrats in the executive branch. You know, why can't you just go tell them, you know, not to demolish our dam? You should go tell the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that they have to leave it there. It's like, well, that would, or the president. They want the president to go tell them that, too. It's like, okay, in a monarchy, that would be terrific. But that's not, again, what we have. So then people start grasping, and I'm sure you hear all this stuff, too, and just rip your hair out. Then you start hearing, well, we need term limits now. Let's put term limits on the people making the laws because the people who are regulating us are doing a bad job. It's like, oh, wait a minute.
Don't we have elections?
That's actually not how that works.
Yeah,
we have term limits. We call them elections. But, yeah, I don't know. Glad I got that all out.
It's
just
bugs
me.
You're right. I mean, people do get a little desperate.
But they start blaming the wrong. Yeah, they blame the wrong entity.
Right.
You know, they're looking for the fix in the wrong place.
Yeah, and they're looking at a very quick fix, too, which is always very hard.
Well, then there's that.
This is a long game. It's a very, very long game. And we have one of the things that Trump has been doing, and that is appointing young judges. That was very important. When I was in the Reagan administration, we were doing the same. We were finding people who were in their early 40s who would serve a long time on the court and on the courts. And the reason was that we were hoping that these good conservatives would have their influence would be felt over a long period of time. And that's true now on the Supreme Court, with the exception of Justice Thomas, who's probably 70 years old. All the rest of them are young men.
Yeah. Well, you look at what has happened. You know, I'm sure it was crushing to watch, you know, Clinton roll in and unravel so much stuff and give so much power to the bureaucrats, especially in the environmental arena, just mushroomed their control and their ability to really make their own rules.
Right. And, this is something that can be fixed, and that's why I wrote the book, because it's so important that we understand what the stakes are here and how this can actually be accomplished. And that's why it says this is the last chance to rein in the administrative state, because if we don't do it through the court system, we'll never be able to do it.
Yeah, that's true. And so once they, I guess I'm trying to think like, okay, so let's say this passes. Let's kind of fast forward into the direction that we could see it going. Okay, so the Supreme Court takes this up and says, okay, bureaucrats, you guys aren't allowed to make up regulations that suit you. Everything has to be tied to a law that was passed by the representatives of the people. Period. Are people going to have to... It's kind of what Bill asked earlier. You know, how much of it will go away? I mean, what do you think? Do you think they'll fix some of this themselves, or we can just have to sue them from now until hell freezes over so that we can?
I think a lot of it will be fixed just by what the court has said in one case. A lot of it will be fixed.
Yeah, that's
every agency has lawyers.
That's true.
None of them want to be in court defending something that is going to be overturned. So they will tell their officials, their bosses, so to speak, look, if you go forward with this, this is a very dicey interpretation. And I think that if you're taken to court by someone who is regulated by this rule you're proposing, you're going to lose. And so many of the officials will then pull back, and they won't try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
That stops the ones that could come out, that won't come out because of what the Supreme Court has done. We still have a whole lot that are there already and have been interpreted in certain ways by the agencies, and those have to be attacked too. But I do believe that the agencies, as they watch the process, as they see that the courts are being very restrictive in what they allow the agencies to do, they will stop trying to use laws that were passed 30, 40, or 50 years ago to make new regulations, because they will realize that it's very hard to get a court to believe that Congress intended something to be done now in the economy we have today that Congress could not even have conceived of when they adopted, say, the Fair Labor Standards Act in 1932.
See, that's a, you know, and it's interesting. All of us that are chatting with each other, it's a good thing we're all old, because we remember when winning was winning and losing was losing. Now everybody gets a trophy. But in this circumstance, the concept of winning and losing comes right home. So it is a good thing that there are winners and losers. Well, it's always been a good thing, but maybe this will help people figure that out. We've got to take one last quick break. We're going to come back with our guest, Peter J. Wallison. He is the author of Judicial Fortitude. Sounds like an awesome read. We have not had a chance to do that yet. You're listening to We the People. You can find everything about this show at wethepeopleradio.us. Bureaucrat theme song.
There you go. Peter, one of the
you can if your book ever becomes a musical, you could use that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it becomes a musical. I'm in great shape.
Hey, Peter. One of the things we were talking about at the break was in the past, traditionally, I guess, when it comes time to appoint a judge, the president usually takes the recommendation of the sitting Senate or senator or whatever from that particular district takes their recommendation for the appointment. Is that the case with Trump now? Is he kind of breaking from that and making his own, or is he still accepting the recommendations? I know in the Ninth Circuit, I think he made a comment about he wasn't going to require or didn't really need a recommendation from Feinstein or the rest of them. He had his own folks. Is that the case?
Yes, that's right. He has been using something called the Federalist Society, which is a group of young, well, they were young once. These are lawyers. Many of them were Supreme Court clerks and clerks for other courts and judges. He has been using them to make recommendations for good judges in the not only the Supreme Court, but in the appellate courts and
right.
in some cases the district courts, too. So he's not relying on the local senator to make these recommendations, although if the senator who is a friend of Trump's or someone who is a supporter of Trump's and makes a recommendation of someone who falls into the category of young, intelligent, vigorous, and conservative, I think Trump
yeah,
would not
that'd probably be a good pick. Right, and I imagine that is probably upsetting the status quo in D.C.
How dare
it's
he?
It's kind of taking their power away a little bit, because that's a big deal.
Oh, a huge deal.
Yeah.
And it is a little bit under the kinds of news that most people get, but in D.C. it is a big deal that all these people are getting these very, very important, powerful judgeships.
Mm-hmm. That's a good thing.
How dare he take recommendations from someone else that isn't, nailed down to the beltway? Stunning the kinds of things they complain about.
Also, things in the Senate that have made it difficult, too, and that is the Senate has always had these informal agreements among themselves. And so if someone is appointed from your state and you don't like that person, you can stop it. That has basically been pushed aside by the Republicans in the Senate now. So if a Democrat doesn't like the fact that they doesn't like a particular person who's been nominated from his or her state, they say, well, okay, we appreciate that, but we're going forward with this anyway. I mean, it's because it is so important that they understand in the Senate how important this really is, even though it doesn't make a lot of news around the country.
Right, right. And I think that's the part that I think people are missing. So
how quickly do you think these cases will be heard? How does that work? What's kind of the...
Well, it is slow. The judicial system works slowly, but the great advantage of it is that once the Supreme Court has made a decision, all the courts fall into place. And that's good and bad. For example, in the so-called Chevron decision that I talked about before, with deference to agency's interpretation of the laws, when the Supreme Court made that decision, then immediately all the courts in the country started to give deference to administrative agencies. And now if the court turns around the Chevron case, which many people and I think they will eventually do, then that will turn on a dime everything that happens in the court system. So it's really a unique way of dealing with this problem. Even if you had majorities in Congress, you wouldn't be able to get these things controlled as easily as you can if you have the right kind of court system.
Right, because you pass the law, the bureaucrats make kooky regulations and basically disregard the law, and the court says, oh, but that's okay, they can do that. So you're back to square one, but you already made the law. So what are you going to do, make another one? No, this one, you really, for real.
Yeah, it's very hard to do. So that's why the court system would work very well once they take it upon themselves to read carefully what the agents, what the Congress has done, and to say, I ruled this is outside what Congress
right.
did. And the book has many examples of this. So a reader will be able to understand then how the system got out of control and why it would be pretty easy for the courts to bring it back into control.
Now, when the courts pick a case to hear, I mean, obviously they don't hear very many cases in a year, what, 12, 15 cases a year. Do they pick cases that will have the biggest impact or the most influence over pending cases they have to hear? In other words, to take a lot off the docket at one time with one ruling. Is that?
Yeah. Well, both. I mean, actually, the Supreme Court will take about 60 cases a year.
Oh, okay.
And some of them they take because the circuits, the circuit courts, the 9th, the 5th, the 6th, and so forth, the circuit courts are in disagreement. Mm-hmm. They have come up with different interpretations of the same law.
Right.
So the Supreme Court will take that case to settle that issue.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no longer a disagreement among the circuits. They will also take a case where they want to make some important decision. And that's the one I was talking about earlier, the one that they did the beginning of last week. It's called the Kisor case, K-I-S-O-R. That case involved just a single guy who was unable to get coverage for medical care from the Veterans Administration because of an interpretation they made of their own regulations. This is a very, very small matter in terms of, it's big for him, mm-hmm. but it's small in terms of the entire, get the Supreme Court reached out, took that case, and said they were going to decide this. And I think we know what they're going to decide because they wouldn't have taken the case unless they were going to overrule this deference, because they've been doing it for 85 years, and it mm-hmm. doesn't make any sense for them to take this case and just say, oh, well, we've been right for 85 years. No, they're going to overturn that deference case. And that's an example of another way that the court influences the way the government operates.
I think that's fantastic, because honestly, we have gone so far afield from, you know, where we should be. VA is a great example, and honestly, one of the things I think so many people, especially in the rural parts of our country, which is the vast majority of the geography of our country, is rural, and you look at the crushing interference with all these agencies that have just been loaded up with environmental activists, really. And so, you know, they just regulate the way they see the world, and then, bing, they get to be in charge.
Yep.
It's a travesty.
Right. And you don't even have to be elected.
No, no. And so then they look at the elected people, and they're like, what do we care about you? Yeah.
That's terrible.
Right.
Peter, thank you for coming on. This has been an enlightening conversation, and I'm definitely going to get this book because it's a big deal. It's a big deal right now.
This is kind of a Christmas present for everybody because, you know, for all those people that are wishing that the agencies get their wings clipped.
Yep, it's coming.
It sounds like it's coming. God, that's fantastic.
One thing I might say is that it's probably difficult to find it in a bookstore, so the best thing to do is to go to Amazon, which has them.
Okay.
And sells them at a discount, which is something people will like too. But if you go to your local bookstore, the chances are they don't have the book.
Just not. They're just not tuning in on the important stuff.
Yes,
what the heck is up with that?
Exactly.
So the book is Judicial Fortitude. The author is Peter Wallison, Wallison. And I will put all those links on the website for you. Peter, thanks a million.
Thanks so much. I enjoyed this talk.
All right. Have a Merry Christmas. We'll be back for our second hour where we're going to talk about Merry Christmas with our guest, Bruce Moran. You're listening to We the People.
I've heard it in songs. I've read it in Luke. I believe in my heart, it's the gospel truth. But we'll never know just what it was like to be a part of that scene the first Christmas night. The big star was shining, angels were smiling, wise men came from afar. Who would have dreamed the King of all kings would lay on some hay in a barn? Just some old farmland with a savior in the hands of a sweet young innocent girl. When heaven came down to earth, it must have been out of this world.
And welcome to the second half of We the People Radio.
Gee, what are we going to talk about?
Welcome to Christmas. We've moved over to Christmas. So my name is Aaron Ryan, and
I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team
Fits
Power.
The song. The song was for the sponsor.
There. Yeah, that's right. Go out and buy yourself a new tractor. I'm sure there's somebody in your house that probably wants a new tractor this year.
Go down
or a mower, or you know, some little attachment for the back. Go down and see the folks at Team Power. They're on Twinview Boulevard, 3119 Twinview. Easy for me to say. just south of Phil's Propeller, and they can fix you up, put that new John Deere Kubota underneath your tree. And you can reach them on the telephone, 530-226-9226, or get them online at readingtractors.com. They'll fix you up and make it a special Christmas.
And you've got
hats, toys, pedal tractors. Yeah, we can take care of you.
You don't want the big machinery, or you already have the big machinery.
Yeah.
But you want fun Christmas stuff.
Yeah, go down there and talk to them.
Thought I'd just put that in there for you.
Yeah, thanks
a lot. It's a group commercial.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for the help, Aaron.
The sponsorship's always a group thing. So we hope you enjoyed the first half about judicial fortitude. Lord knows we could use some of that. So we're headed the right direction there. And if you happen to miss that, go back to the archives at wethepeopleradio.us, and a little bit after 2, we'll have that on there for you. So for everybody who's being crushed by regulation and frustrated that that's not being fixed,
yep, there's
hope. Is a super important hour for you to tune into, because that's I think it's going to provide a wealth of a solution.
Mm-hmm.
So moving swiftly on, our guest Bruce Moran's going to take a deviation from national security.
Yeah, yeah. I heard him in there ho-ho-ho.
He was ho-ho-ing us.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you know, he's got 2 hours.
Bruce does ho-ho-ho.
He's got 2 hours on us in Chicago, so he's closer to Christmas than we are.
That's true. Probably a little colder there, too.
Me too.
Bruce, how you doing?
Merry Christmas to everybody. It's been quite a year for all of us in national security, and as you were talking about the assessment in the judiciary and the awareness that needs to be there, it's a shift to the awakening, the spiritual awareness that's always been in our country since the founding fathers. I think it's a wonderful thing.
No, I do too, because that really has been lacking in the past years. I mean, more and more and more, they seem to be taking it away and not putting any focus on it at all.
Well, the left wants us to believe that our rights come from government.
Yeah.
But our country was founded on the principle that our rights come from our Creator.
That's right.
Very different.
It's very sad for the kids, though, for me. I mean, they're not given the opportunities to use your imagination, creativity, and really enjoy Christmas like it was. And I think it's still here, as you know, but it's different. And different in a way where there's a lot of technology involved and a lot of commercials.
Well, it's very commercialized, yeah.
Yeah, and just general commercials. I mean, the kids today are on social media, so they're getting a lot of information pushed on them. I mean, even with the toys and things like that. And I feel that's good because they get the information, but I feel it's also not so good in a way where they're not able to just be kids and play out in the yard and play with each other and use their minds and be out in nature, which is our, you know, that's God and that's the spiritual part. The American Indians knew it, you know. I mean, everybody knew that. The settlers of our country knew that. They're always in nature. But we've moved away into the urban areas, and it's become isolated, and the families have become nuclear. We are not having extended families anymore. I'm very saddened by that myself.
Yeah. No, it's true. I mean, we usually start, well, after Thanksgiving, but anymore, it seems like it's Halloween. We're starting to see the commercialization of Christmas, but it's all about the gift giving and not the real meaning
still,
of Christmas.
You know, it's fun. There are still a lot of, especially out in our rural areas, there still are a lot of fun activities that are community based. You know, for kids that are real Christmas. It
right.
isn't always shopping malls, but not sure kids in the city get that same view.
Yes, it's mixed here. You know, we have that, too. We have our Festival of Lights parade. It's like Macy's. I mean, we have different things like
that. The Reading Lighted Parade, it's exactly like Macy's.
Yeah.
only different.
Yeah, only different.
Only different, a little smaller.
Yeah, we didn't have the big peanuts float, but other than that, it was
We didn't have any floating anything. We had a lot of pickup trucks.
Oh, that's
though.
Right.
We did.
Yeah, we didn't have any balloons.
I like to say thank you to everybody who listens to us in the Ukraine. They'll be celebrating Christmas next week, and over in Europe, the fine people in Europe, and in Africa down there, and
our friends in South Africa who struggle.
It's all happening with Jerusalem and Bethlehem. So, I mean, there's a lot of the power of the divinity of Jesus appearing. You know, is 2,218 years ago. So
yeah,
it's hard to believe. It's, you know.
Well, I think that's a great point, because I think people lose sight of the fact that where 2018 comes from, where that date comes from, it's the beginning.
Yeah. And
great, Bill, you broke the show.
Oh, sorry. I was pondering.
It's wonderful, too. You know, it's a wonderful time. It's a wonderful season. It's a wonderful life. I mean, that's what it was about. Always about sharing and caring and having compassion and, you know, really being Americans in that way. And, you know, it came from a European tradition also, you know. So all throughout Europe and that idea of Kris Kringle and the father of Christmas and St. Nicholas, that's all embedded through Europe. And what a great tradition that is.
Yeah.
You know, and that it's being lost in a way where we're getting out of touch with the very spiritual aspect of Jesus and what it really meant through the Creator. He's the Son of God, and it's supposed to be the gift to us to help us understand life more in a different way. And when Jesus was born, it was about being childlike, about understanding children and how they grow and how they have a love for life and a love for God and a love for what we would call on our, you know, on our radio show, a love for country, you know. And you have those abilities to express yourself in different ways when you see it in the eyes of the kids. And they're wide open. They want to learn. They want to share. They want to be part of a larger community. And that's much different, you know, than when we grew up. And that's why I said I felt sad about that.
Yeah,
so I wrote a piece of poetry on it. So if people want to go online to take a look at it, it talks about our spiritual heritage, where it comes from, and how Santa Claus is embodied all over the world in every country. And, you know, it's celebrated in different ways because of the cultures are being a little differently and how they interpret, you know, Christ and how they interpret Jesus and how they think about gift-giving. Even in China, I was in China during one of the holiday seasons, and you would think you're in the United States when you're walking through, you know, the cities. In Beijing and Shanghai and whatever.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, for,
well,
for a culture
our,
that's
our Christmas not, decorations come from China.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
all joking aside about made in China, I mean, they are made in China.
And to the nth degree, I mean, it was unbelievable. I said, well, we're thinking of taking Christmas away in certain ways in the United States, and here I am in China, it's just the opposite. They go full blow, you know, everything's out there. I'm like, geez. This is something that made you feel good, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, that was a different way of me and myself when I was doing my international travels more. I'm doing a little less now, of course, but, you know, I'm trying to work on national security here. But these things are just important for kids to get a hold of having a spiritual life and understanding the Creator. And like we were saying, it's in the Declaration of Independence. We are endowed with things by our Creator, and this is part of what it is, you know, this understanding of our country and the beauty of our country and how it's always giving and always helping out throughout time since our founding fathers.
Let's take a quick break.
And on that note, enter, cue the Christmas music. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
shepherd boy to the mighty King. Do you know what I know? In your palace warm, mighty King. Do you know what I know? A child shivers in the cold. Let us bring him silver and gold. Bring him silver and gold.
We're back with Bruce Moran. Bruce, we were talking about Christmas being celebrated in China. Do they celebrate Christmas there in the Christian sense, or is it? Or
only
is
if you want to donate your organs.
Well. Maybe they put that on hold.
As we learned a few weeks ago.
Okay. Yes, they do, because they do have Christian community there. They have a Taoist community also. As you know, I'm also from the Tai Chi background.
Mm-hmm.
And they have acupuncture there, so they know about the energies in the body. So there's a different understanding in a lot of different ways than Americans think of it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get into, you know, the negative stuff, we can talk about that, but that's not what this program is about.
No, that's talking just about all negative stuff. We can do that a different day.
That's Aaron.
We do that all the time.
That's what I mean. You know, and it's easy for me because I'm always addressing areas on human rights. So, I mean, there's a whole gamut of issues we can talk about through the UN and things of that nature. So what we're talking about, China has some problems because they're trying to deal with these issues themselves. And the new president or chairman, you know, he's for life, so he's dealing with how they need to feed all those people.
Right.
So that's a real basic utilitarian understanding, but then you get into how do you get to those points and how do you adapt, you know, your country. And as they've opened their doors over the last 30 years, there's a greater Western influence there. And, of course, they know what we do here in Christmas time, as you know, because those Christmas decorations are all over Beijing and Shanghai and mm-hmm. you know, Chengdu and all the bigger cities, Guangzhou. So, I mean, they do celebrate, too. And I'm sure some of them are practicing the way we do, but they don't want to become overt. You know, so it's always going to be like that. I mean, there's always going to be differences of ideas, but the idea of Christ, the idea of Christmas, the idea of giving, the idea of sharing, of being compassionate, that's a universal spiritual truth that just can't go unnoticed.
No, you're absolutely right. I think, I mean, throughout history, we've always seemed to go back to around Christmas time. It seems like our people kind of go back to the charity and the goodwill to men and it's too bad we can't stay in that mindset, you know.
Yeah, it's the longevity of that concept that trips us up so badly.
That's true.
Well, that is true and not true because we're the ones who advocate the other side. We're advocating, you know, helping people and becoming individuals and understanding the way our country was formed. And we're talking about individuals now, individual rights, freedoms, and our ability to be a sovereign individual. Mm-hmm. I think everybody feels that way, but they're not always living in a country that gives them the opportunities to do that.
No, that's right. We are very, very fortunate. And I've always said that if you want to have an appreciation of what we have. I mean, it's real easy for people to look down on our government and the way our way of life. But if you want a real appreciation for it, go overseas and see how some of these other cultures live and how their freedoms are limited. And I think you'll have a whole new outlook on how fortunate and blessed we are to live in this country.
Right, and the blessing is just not limited to us. The blessing is always an infinite blessing for everybody to take that up anytime they want to.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Creator. The Creator's here for everybody. We just happen to be a country that's founded on it. We broke away from Britain because we wanted not to be a colony anymore.
Right.
And we started a whole new trend, a whole new idea about the individual around the world. We set the tone. And
right.
I like that individual sovereignty because that's who we really are. We're all individuals, and we respect that and honor that.
Mm-hmm.
The best, you know, you can when you're, you know, working with other people around the world. But I see it, if you look at, you know, I wrote about the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, and that was Nebuchadnezzar. But that was where Christ's apostles first appeared. Those were the Assyrian Christians that went way back, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of Iraq now. So that whole understanding of those history, I call them benchmarks, are in with the people there. They know about that too, but we don't recognize that, and they recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
That's Persia. That
sure.
was one of the three kings that came to, you know, Bethlehem.
Right. How do we?
And that's powerful to me.
No, it is. It's very powerful. But how do we get back to that? I mean, it. We used
we're
to teach.
There and we got to go forward.
Yeah, well, we used
it's
to teach it in school, and you know, we used
keep
to
giving our message out about this, and let them know that they have the opportunities for themselves to express themselves in their own freedom,
mm-hmm.
in their own liberty, and their own justice in a way which is closer to the spiritual aspect of the way the Creator endowed us with.
Right.
I think that's a very beautiful thing because the kids. The kids' eyes, the kids love it. The kids grow. They develop a stronger individuality, and it helps the whole community, the whole country grow.
Mm-hmm. No, but it's got to be put out there, you know, in the grade schools and in the preschools, and, you know, we've got to expose.
Well, you're talking about the United States now.
Yeah,
I'm talking
yeah.
about the way it's expressed in the world. We know our own inherent problems. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
We know what's being done, but it's also a common, if it's being done outside, also then inside changes too. You see
mm-hmm.
what I mean?
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Our message is strong, and people gravitate towards it, but it's not our message. It's the message that is natural from, you know, the spiritual side that we are part of. And that's who we are as people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, you know, a different understanding, you know, and then, like I wrote about the Aborigine in Australia, in the Bami Cave, they had the Creator there 40,000 years ago.
Right.
They knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, is powerful.
Do you think, as Americans, do you think we do a good job of promoting that message around the world?
I don't know if I want to talk about that. I don't want to talk about it's not promoting God, or it's about the Creator exists already.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm talking about. I mean, they
try to save yourself, Bill.
Yeah, okay. I think we might be saying
it already exists, and the Aborigine, they know about it.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand the Christianity part. To Kahuna in Hawaii, I talked to an elder there years ago
kahuna?
In Maui. And they always knew about this. And that preceded us being, you know, coming to the Hawaiian Islands and, you know, having them become part of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. These things exist. The Hopi Indians knew about it. And I work with the Arapaho in the Wind River Indian Reservation in Wyoming. I was up there. And I know the Mi'kmaq, my friend, worked with them. That was in Maine. And they definitely have that strong understanding of the Creator being the powerful. They call it the Great Spirit, right?
I think
you understand that.
Mm-hmm.
That being the emanating force in all of life. So
it's a big sigh.
Yeah, it's a big thought. I mean, we knew about it if we looked at the Great Pyramids of Egypt. Those were built to go up. To understand the Creator. And they called the Creator at that time, well, we can talk about the Colossus of Rhodes too, at the same time. They had Helios and Ra as the creators. And it was prior to Jesus manifesting as the, divinity of God on earth. We didn't have no reference point. Everybody had their own understanding, and they built different, you could say, pyramids or mosques or churches or, tabernacles or temples. Now, the Temple of Solomon, I wrote about that in the first page also. It's in Ethiopia. And the tabernacle, which we're talking about, the Ark of the Covenant, the history has it as being down there now. And that's acknowledged in the Quran. I don't think people understand that the Ark of the Covenant is acknowledged in the Quran. And that's pretty powerful to me.
Right.
Because they understand that part of it. They're talking about the manna that the Israelis had survived in the Exodus for 40 years. It was given to them from God. That's in the Ark of the Covenant, along with the Ten Commandments. That's when you first see the manifestation of God on earth with the Ark of the Covenant, because he gave Moses the Ten Commandments. And that's what we follow here in the United States. You know, some of them are, talking about challenging all these things, but I think that's kind of like our basic truths that are self-evident that rely on the Ten Commandments. And
yeah.
As we go back, as we saw in Bethlehem and Jerusalem, that's where it first came about, and then the fall of the Temple of Solomon, and then the Ark of the Covenant disappeared, and it said to be guarded down in Ethiopia. So that's what I had written about that also. I said these are the important spiritual aspects of our history of understanding God, the Creator. Then later was manifest Christ to make us understand that Christ is in each one of us. And that's pretty powerful.
No, it is. It is.
Cue Sarah McLachlan with a little Christmas interlude for us. And
very good.
We'll have a short celebration of capitalism. We're going to come back with more Christmas music and our guest, Bruce Moran. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. What do you say after that?
Yeah, you could.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, so.
We were talking about the Ark of the Covenant and the manna that was given.
Mm-hmm.
And it was talked about in the, of course, in the Bible and also in the Quran. But the manna is, because we grew up Catholic, Aaron and I, and is Bill too?
We wrote
Did
Bill
you grow
in.
Catholic
yeah,
now,
we
or?
No, we wrote Bill in later.
I'm a newbie.
Bill's new, so he knows more about it than we do.
My point is on the manna.
Yeah, I'm going to test you.
In terms of the Mass celebration on Sundays or during the holidays, the manna is the Eucharist. A lot of people don't understand that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is the gift, and you are accepting, you know, God into your life, Jesus into your life. So there are different ways of understanding the Ark of the Covenant and how that. Also in the Ark of the Covenant, there were Zephyril, that would be the protectors. But if you look at it in the Kabbalistic sense, and that would be the Jewish or the, there's Sufis and also the Christian Kabbalist. They look at it as the energies in the body. And if you look at acupuncture, there's a point on the head called the Do 20. It's called the Byway Point. And they do that to calm a person down. They put a needle up in the top of your crown right there. And what is that point for? They call that the convergence of all energies in the body.
Hmm.
Okay.
I did not know that.
Okay, it's a clean sweep. None of us knew that. We're all going,
okay. And that's called Byway, or the Heavenly Gate. And but they practice acupuncture all throughout China because it's like their alternative medicine. They can't afford to have all allopathic medicine, all modern medicine for their people. So they have all these 2,500 year traditions of acupuncture, and they're talking about the feminine and the you know, masculine energies in the body. On the front part of the body, it's called the conceptual vessel, and on the back part of the body, it's called the governing vessel. That's the two major meridians in the body of the 12. And this is all about how these energies work. In the Kabbalistic sense, they talk about the energies in the body coming down from the seven zephyril. Or some say there's 10, some say there's 7 minor, 10 major, but you understand the point. There are these energies that are yin and yang, and they manifest through the Ark of the Covenant. And that's what protected the Ark of the Covenant. If you remember watching the old Indiana Jones show, you know, movie,
mm-hmm.
and they opened it up, and those spirits came out, those were the Zephyril. So.
It's funny,
I've known that story,
but I didn't put the connection with acupuncture in there. That's interesting.
Yeah, but it manifests itself differently throughout the world. You see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's so much different in how the Creator is manifesting and how the Chinese are adapting and how we adapted. And then how what's going on in Jerusalem, you know, in Bethlehem right now. You know, so you have a lot of polar opposites colliding. And that's what I wrote about there. Those are the divine paradoxes. They go back to the old teachings of Hammurabi and Hermetics. And it's a whole beautiful way of understanding life because nothing is one way. Because God, the Creator, is infinite, and He manifests in all these different ways in all our lives. And Jesus was the, you know, physical manifestation of that, and we were fortunate enough to understand it in our way. And that's how we express it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a very beautiful thing.
Bill's gun shy now. He's not going to say anything. I was just waiting.
No, don't wait for me.
Is Bill going to take the bait?
Oh, no, there's no bait at all. I'm just talking.
No, the silence I meant.
My experiences in China with Chinese medicine and my experiences with national security with the Chinese, you know. So I cover a lot of the gamut with knowing what our, you know, what's going on and how serious it is, and then knowing what their positions are and how we think, but there's also these other sides of how people get along. And that's the commonality, you know. And I find it to be one of the greatest and best blessings that the United States has is to bring that forward and to understand that and to help other people become individuals with their rights, freedoms, and liberties. Not to have that taken away. Once people experience that, then the whole world will grow in a much larger, dynamic, beautiful, wonderful way, like mm-hmm. a wonderful life.
Sure. Yeah. Sure. I mean, to bring it back to to our country. I would like to see that line of thought brought back into our culture more, and not be trying to remove it from our teachings.
Well, it can't just be one day a year.
No, exactly.
That's the difficulty. We've said, okay, Christmas can be one day a year. Oh, yeah, but you can't talk about it either.
Yeah.
And
you can't say it is during the season.
Then there's that.
You can't say it's Christmas. You got to say it's a holiday.
Yeah.
Right,
happy,
right.
Happy holidays.
Yes, we have the old holiday party.
An effort to, I would say, neutralize or take away that. They call it secular, but it's more than secular. It's a powerful movement to take away our individual rights, liberties, and freedoms. That's how I look at it.
Oh, I do too.
That we're endowed with by the Creator.
I think in our
you've crossed the line now. And if you want us all to be automatons and, you know, follow or Salian, you know, Orson Welles type of 1984, that's not for me or anything I ever grew up with or ever believed in or what my grandparents came over here.
No.
You know, from the old country, because they were, you know, doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
That, Aaron talked to me about with the Chinese.
And right.
It's about who we are, how independent we are, how lovely we are as a country. You know, you have the Southerners, the Northerners, the Easterners, the Westerners, you know. We have all different parts of our own culture and all different kinds of people, you know. And we accept everybody. And we accept them in a way where, you know, we're part of a larger, beautiful, dynamic system that was founded under the Constitution, which is a beautifully written document
mm-hmm.
of our the seven principles of the Constitution, which people don't and aren't educated in. I think that's what... you know, Bill was talking about.
Yeah, I think
how do we get back to helping people realize what gifts we are giving
mm-hmm.
with to grow up with, and how are they expressed in our daily lives? And that's our government, our mm-hmm. constitution, our you know the way we're treated, and how our individuality is versus other countries.
Right.
Well, the sovereignty of the individual makes us very, very unique, and it's interesting because. I was thinking while you were speaking there, on the one hand, we've done these shows with people who grew up in China thinking that all their rights and basically they grew up with no individual freedom, no individual thought, no consideration for their individual wishes. It was all about the collective, all about the state. And when they came here, it took them, the one lady, a decade.
Yeah, 10 years.
To even believe that was possible, to have your own way of thinking. And she said it was incredibly difficult. She was constantly looking for, what am I supposed to do now, instead of, I can do whatever I want. Like, well, that was too far away. Then you look at our friends in South Africa, and those folks went there, worked hard. 360 years later, all of a sudden, now they want to impose the will of the collective, take away private property, and put them under the thumb. And trying to go back that direction, once you've been a sovereign individual, and you've had your...
It's so true.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm not laughing because...
Yeah, going backwards is just not working.
It's the people that rise to power that take it and abuse it. That's what we're saying.
Well, look at mm-hmm. France. France, you know, it's like, here, you guys will do what we tell you. They're like, hey, you see this red vest, buddy? Or yellow vest? There's more of us, by the way. And we're
yeah.
coming for you.
Well, I think in our efforts
people
to just become
roll over.
Politically correct, we're deviating from who we really are.
Well, we're trying to convince people that they're not sovereign individuals, that they are, that they have to constantly be part of this community, and there is no right, there is no wrong, and you know, people are sort of sucking
that's
under
an
for that
attitude also.
Oh,
that's colonial attitude.
It's
the king attitude. See what I mean?
People seem to be falling for it, but I for my money, it isn't going to hold.
No, it's
we
not
have
gonna
to
hold.
Let's take another Christmas music break.
Okay,
huh? How about that, boys? And
let's get back to what I was trying to.
Yeah,
commit.
Sorry.
All right, hold that thought.
Look at us.
Okay,
look at us. We derailed him.
Yeah, we'll get back.
We'll be back.
Oh come, ye.
to Bethlehem. Come and behold him, born the King of angels. Oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him. Oh, come, let us adore him, Christ the Lord. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. Yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide gay.
Make the Yuletide gay.
From now on, our troubles will be miles away.
That's where we've been. Bruce and Bill and I, we've been to the olden days. Ashley, not so much. Ashley's from the modern era.
I'm trying to
Viva the olden days.
My own mind, because I'm trying to keep it on the positive side, because we're always, you know, we're fighters. We're the Jedi Knights. We're out there, you know, in the field, and we're, you know, all our friends are doing all the different things around the world and trying to uphold the good. You know, and stuff like that. But there's this other side of us that's a very soft and compassionate, loving side, and that's what I'm trying to express today. That's a side that's not really recognized enough, you know, around the world, that we are a really giving country. We're trying to do the best we can to uphold everybody's individual rights, freedoms, and liberties. But there's this constant tug of war going on, and it's about power, and the power comes from the Creator. So if everybody would recognize the source first, then there wouldn't be as many struggles. But since that doesn't do the job for people who are basically controlling various countries, you know, in a certain way, maybe dictators, or there's a lot of drug money running around the world too, they have a different position. So our job, I would say, according to the spiritual context, would be to offer the people a better way for themselves. And it's not just the United States. This has to be done through the United Nations, because they're, you know, principal to all the countries. And Ambassador Haley, she's stepping down. God bless her, you know, work there. But we need people to step up like she does and be strong and have fortitude and strength to make sure that those principles are upheld by all countries, and they're not trying to whitewash it to gain the power over those countries just to take away their resources. So what I'm talking about is a lot of countries aren't strong. They're failed states. They're developing countries. They're countries that are third world countries, and they need to be helped in a way internally to help support their particular needs. And when you have a larger power group come in, it tells them what to do, then they take control of their country. And this is what Aaron is saying, and, you know, and Bill is also saying, that these are not the proper and fitting ways to have countries become independent and sovereign, have their people become independent, sovereign, and find their own, you know, rights and how they want to evolve as a country, and according to what we look at it according to the, you know, what we're dealt with by the Creator.
Well, you know, the other thing that we see that's very different from when we were all kids, Christmas was about Christmas. You never would have like a ball game, or you wouldn't go shopping, or no stores were open. I mean, heaven forbid you forgot something for Christmas dinner. There wasn't a store for miles open. The world kind of shut down during that time period. It was about family. It was about, I mean, when we lived back east, we didn't have family close by for quite a while. So we would, my mom would always ask, like, the parish priest, you know, hey, is there anybody who's going to be alone for the holiday? And then, you know, whatever holiday it was, Christmas, Thanksgiving, or whatever. And, you know, we would invite those people to our house. So we would kind of borrow family. We borrowed this one guy named Mr. Potluck for Thanksgiving. And that was a whole different story.
That was his real name, Mr. Potluck?
Yeah, his name was Mr. Potluck. Yeah.
Wow.
And that's how you get your five kids to run when the phone rings. You know, usually when the phone rings, everybody runs for the phone. In our house, everybody ran from the phone because it was Mr. Potluck who would say, hello. And he spoke German, so it mostly ended with hello. And then you were trapped on the phone. Oh, but I digress.
Oh, but you do
digress. Oh, the memories.
So Bruce, to kind of keep with the theme of what you're talking about there, when we
go to the end of the piece, I think it pretty much, okay. We got 15 minutes or are we a little longer?
No, we've got like
four or five minutes?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We're at the end of the minutes.
Okay, so what we're talking about is Christmas time is going to be quickly coming upon us. You know, and that is to understand where we all exist in the world. And if you're going to service, if you're going to, you know, your church, your temple, you know, wherever you're at, let's pray, you know, for the spiritual integrity of the country and the world to be maintained. And that, to me, is the most important. That's our spiritual guidance by the Creator, that we're all different individuals, but we all have our individual rights and freedoms, and that's predicated on each other. You start taking it away, and you start having these polemic differences in every one of the countries, and with everyone who wants to control those countries, too. So, as maybe Bill can read the last paragraph, and that'll kind of get us out of, you know, okay?
Uh-oh. I just took the pages out. Because we
no, I think I still have it here.
Okay.
As Christmas time is fast approaching, let us never forget to remember, to recall, to be most grateful for all, the all and the all, in the spiritual heritage which embraces the continuous loving, respecting, and honoring of each other in all things, big and small, that is what it is, exists in the finite. The all in the all, expanse of the I am that I am universe in which we all abide on the edges of the ledges of the Christmas tree. Hedges as impeccable, radiant, light beings.
The edges of the ledges.
Yeah.
I like the edges of the ledges.
Yeah, so...
Imperceptible, radiant light beings.
Yeah.
In other words, God exists in all of us, and the light is only shut off because we're not using it in a proper and fitting way.
Right.
And
that's hard. That's hard to express. That's
the tree of life.
Yeah, it's hard to express to people. You know, you're talking about people in foreign countries and who we are. I think that's a challenge to express that to other people and have them understand and trust what we're about.
Well, the Christmas trees are they're all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And they are ever present. The Creator is everywhere in everything we do. So that's kind of, you know, a message for all of us to better ourselves, to better everybody, you know, better ourselves and help better everybody, you know, help better our environment and everything around us.
Mm-hmm.
During this time of year.
Yeah, and not just this time of year. I mean, we have to kind of keep that in the forefront as much as possible, so you know we can kind of stay on.
I think God would
path.
Be proud of us if we could spread it out, make it last a little longer.
Exactly.
Well, we can put our lightsabers away because we're always fighting their cause.
I know it.
Try to, you know, reconcile more, and you know, get into the dialogue of why it's important. Rather than trying to use a legal means and constitute a way to force people to do things. And it's, that's very bad, because that's why we broke away from England, because of the, you know, different...
Mm. No, you're right. You're right.
...sentiments that were placed upon us.
Mm-hmm.
And now England's, you know, fighting for its right, you know, through Brexit and stuff. So, I mean, it's reversed there, too. So, we were all faced with very much a lot of difficulties, and we need to protect our spiritual heritage across the board, all of us, every single one of us.
Right. Well, thank you, Bruce, for enlightening us and giving us your thoughts.
It was nice to take a little
Christmas
deviation down,
yeah,
down.
Yeah, it was
down Christmas lane rather than national security lane.
Well, thank you. God bless you all. God bless all the Americans. You know, all of us are struggling with this, as Bill and you were saying, and it's something that we need to directly address for our kids.
Yes.
Exactly.
So they can become free and independent and not assume, you know, something else in their lives which is going to take away from them and, you know, suppress them and not have them be full individuals and stymie their creativity. That's what I'm talking about.
Yep.
That is,
and it all starts with, yeah, come from the Creator, not the government.
Thank you, Bruce, and you have a Merry Christmas. And
thanks a million. Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year, and we're going to have you back in 2020. No, 2019.
Okay.
2019. We didn't go to 2020 yet.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. We don't have to duke that out yet.
Yeah.
All righty.
God bless everybody in Ukraine and Europe, Africa, Middle East that are listening, and all around our country. Okay.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Alrighty, you've been listening to We the People. You can find everything about the program and archives of the shows at wethepeopleradio.us.